Members, if you gathered at the table, we're going to call this to order in about 30 seconds. And since my assistant has informed me we do have a sufficient number of members for a quorum.
That too.
We'll call the meeting to order. Let's see. First thing is the clerk will note the roll. I should ask our interim clerk because you may just want to hold Anna in your thoughts. She's pretty ill and is actually hospitalized for a couple days. So we have a very capable assistant today, Sarah. Sarah, do you know, can you recognize everyone around the table, or do you need to actually call the roll? She has pictures. We're covered. Okay. She will. The clerk will note the roll then. That's what I was looking for. Someone can move the minutes. That would be appreciated. Representative Benson's moved the minutes. Looked them over. Representative Murdoch, you chaired the meeting last time. Do they look pretty good to you? And thank you for your capable work filling in for me last meeting. Further discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, Representative Szymanski.
Mr. Chairman, I noticed that in the members present, it indicated the chair, Mike Beard, was present.
Wow, good catch. Actually, the chair did come and touch the table for 3 or 4 minutes.
I stand corrected.
All right.
That's all it takes is to come touch the table?
Well, we'll talk offline.
Okay.
Members, further discussion about the minutes. Nice try, Representative Szymanski. Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you. That's the longest we've ever taken to do the minutes. I'm impressed. Representative Liebling has House File 93 that you'd like to present to the committee on this Rochester Day. One of the Rochester representatives is here with the bill. Sure. And I'll... Because Representative Liebling does not have the good fortune to be a member of this committee, I'll ask Representative Benson, who's also a Rochester-type person, if he would like to move House File 93.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before you do, is this going straight to the General Register? Oh, that we're going to... Okay, move that the bill be laid over for inclusion in the probable transportation omnibus bill, and if there is not one, Representative Liebling, I assure you we'll bring you back and pass your bill. On its
Thank
own.
You, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that we lay this bill over for the omnibus transportation bill.
Well, okay, we'll hold it for possible inclusion. Yeah, this technically. That's what he meant to say.
Absolutely.
So the bill is before us. House File 93 is moved, and Representative Liebling, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing this, and especially on Rochester Day at the Capitol. And hope all the members will be joining us at the Armory this evening, and I know for Representative Benson and I, it's a pretty exciting day here. And Mr. Chair, there is an author's amendment for this bill to put it in its proper form, and I also have a change to incorporate in the author's amendment, which the folks from MnDOT just were speaking to me and advised me I needed to do, and that would be on the author's amendment, which is the A1 amendment.
And we're going to have Representative Benson move that in just a moment after you make the oral correction. Members, on line 1.110, I believe Representative Liebling is about to make a change.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, to strike the words "on the bridge or" on line 110. And with that, I would ask Representative Benson to move the author's
amendment. Okay, before he does, we'll ask... Mr. Burris, to read it as you understand it so we have it correctly engrossed.
Mr. Chair and members, the oral amendment is page 1, line 10, delete "on the bridge or".
So it shall read, "shall erect the appropriate signs as close as practicable to the bridge". Mr. Benson, is that your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, my motion is to... is for the author's amendment to House File 93.
Okay, we have the amendment offered to get the bill in the shape that Representative Liebling would like to present. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Liebling.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And with me today is Councilman Michael Wojcik from Rochester, who originally came to me with this proposal. I'm going to let him explain just briefly for the committee what's behind it, but I just wanted to say this is the first time I've done this in my, now I'm in my fourth term here at the legislature, but I've seen many of these go through It's not obvious from the face of it, but there's no cost to the state. This is all local cost. And the amendment, the author's amendment, was to update this. Mr. Burris helped me and to get it in the form, in the proper form, and those changes are just technical. But I'm just going to let Councilman Wojcik explain to you a little bit about who this is, and then answer any questions from the committee. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Wojcik, in fact, I believe it's Councilmember Wojcik, correct?
Yes.
If you'd identify yourself for the tape and for the people listening at home on the internet, we'd appreciate it. And proceed.
Councilmember Michael Wojcik from Rochester, Minnesota. I represent the 2nd Ward. Thank you for taking some time to hear from me today. I'll keep this short. As controversial things go, this probably won't be the most controversial thing that comes before you this year. I had the misfortune several years ago living in southwest Rochester, and at the time working at the IBM facility in Rochester. There were two different ways to for me to drive home, and different days I take different routes, and one day on my way home, taking a particular route home, it was clear that something unfortunate had happened on the side of the road. And what had happened on that day is that a little girl riding with her family, three adults, three children, riding on a pedestrian path on one side of the highway, the pedestrian's path then stopped and resumed on the other side of the highway with no signalized intersection. You know, being Minnesota, a lot of caring people stopped their cars on the divided highway. There were two lanes of travel in each direction here. One way, both cars were stopped. The other way, one car had stopped, but there was one lane where there was no car occupying it. And on that day, there was a somebody who was not paying attention went through and collided with Ariana McNamara, who was crossing there, and she unfortunately passed away shortly thereafter. It was a tragic loss to the community, and quite frankly something that got me a lot more interested as an engineer, becoming one of the people who made the decisions on how we designed roads and made them safer for community. Since then, I've had the opportunity to meet with the family, and this bridge, which is a pedestrian improvement going in this area, so this is a 3/4 mile long pedestrian bridge that will eventually connect the Douglas Trail, which is one of the most heavily used state bicycle trails in the state of Minnesota, to downtown Rochester safely over the state highway. As the city council, we discussed this and unanimously decided that it would be appropriate to name this bridge in honor of this this young girl, and brought it forward, discussed it with the family, see if they were interested in having their daughter remembered in that way, and they were. And the city, we have already dedicated the bridge to her, and we had a ribbon cutting as the bridge opened. Her little brother, who's now 11 years old, was the one who cut the ribbon on the bridge. And it's a testament of this bridge, of how you design a system to make all users safe, whether it be pedestrians, bicyclists, automobiles, or transit users. It's an expensive connection, but it's going to give 40,000 households eventually safe access to downtown if they so choose to go that way. And as a result of this, one of the formalities that we need to take care of is, in order to actually put some signage along the highway at some point, which of course would come from private dollars, it needs to be officially dedicated by the state as well as the city, which is why I'm here today. And my only comment on this is it was a tragedy to lose this young girl when we did, and hopefully investments in infrastructure like this are the things that we're going to do to make sure this happens never again in this area. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Counselor. Questions or comments to the bill, to the testifier, the bill as amended? I just have one observation, Representative Liebling. In the original House File 93, it indicated the bridges were to go on the pedestrian trail. Is it your intention now with the A1 amendment, or as amended, that they go on the highway by the bridge or approaching the bridge, or they still stay up on the trail?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think right now we're talking about putting it on the median. So MnDOT folks were just talking with us about, they have some concerns about whether the bridge could actually support a sign. And so it would be somewhere within the right-of-way of the highway. But there's already a sign on the pedestrian approach, I understand.
So. Okay. So this would be in the grassy median between the lanes on Highway 14. And as I'm driving through Rochester, which side of 52 is that? Where would I find this bridge?
Or this we drove is, Mr. Chair, this is on the east side.
The east
of
52?
So this would be as you head out of Rochester going toward Casson.
Okay. Thank you. That helps me understand.
I'm sorry. I have my directions. That's the west side. I'm going toward Casson. That's west.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions or comments? Anyone else in the audience wish to comment on this bill, for or against, or just a comment? Seeing none, Representative Benson renews his motion that House Bill 93, as amended, be held over for possible inclusion, and I don't think we have to vote on that. We'll just do that, and again, if we don't have an omnibus bill, which I'm pretty sure we will notify you and move your bill separately. Representative Liebling, thank you for coming here today. And with that, members, we're ready for a presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
You're welcome. We'll see you tonight at the Armory.
Great.
Members, we have a presentation from MnDOT from the Office of Capital Programs and Performance Measures. We have our good friend Abby McKenzie, who's the Director of Capital Programs and Performance Measures, who will tee this up and start us until we get into the good questions. Then she brought professional help with her, right? Ms. McKenzie, welcome to the Transportation Committee for this biennium. And I see your PowerPoint is teed up and ready to go. So please, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Abby McKenzie, and I'm the Director of the Office of Capital Programs and Performance Measures for MnDOT. And I really think the genesis of the request for this hearing was, how does MnDOT pick projects? And it's turned into a fairly lengthy discussion of our planning and programming process. And so I'm going to go over that for you today. Let me just start with this very, very high-level overview of MnDOT's process for planning capital investments and for project programming. MnDOT and all state transportation agencies have an extensive system for planning and programming capital investments, not only because it is required by state law and federal regulation, but also because it's a wise thing to do. With a 12,000 mile highway system and 4,000 bridges that last for many, many decades, we must carefully plan and prioritize our investments to use our limited resources in the most effective way possible. So, this graph just shows you that we begin with the statewide transportation plan. And that's a 20-year plan. Then we go into the 20-year highway capital plan. You see that up in the corner, but we have long-range capital plans for all the modes. Then we go into the program of capital projects, and that's the point at which we actually commit funding to specific projects and begin to develop them for delivery. After that, we obviously construct them, we operate and maintain the road, and it comes around all over again. So I'm going to go into a little more detail today about MnDOT's highway planning and programming process.
Ms. McKenzie, before you do, can I just make an observation, particularly for the freshmen and the new folks on the committee, and correct me if I'm assuming too much. Folks, sometimes we hear bills here when you come and you say, I want to direct MnDOT to build a new bridge in my town or upgrade this highway to freeway status. Generally speaking, we do not do that in this committee. Sometimes we'll hear them to be polite and lay them over, whatever, just so we don't have to vote no in front of your friends. But MnDOT has, over the years, I believe bipartisanly, we have done an outstanding job of keeping MnDOT as unpolitical in the programming selection process as possible. So what Ms. McKenzie is about to describe to you is actually how reasonable people with engineering standards and other criteria actually rank projects and decide how projects get put into the queue, move up in line, and actually get built, absent legislators telling them to do those things. And I don't think any of us on any side of the aisle want to actually get into doing that. So this is why this is important that you understand. So Ms. McKenzie, thank you for letting me just kind of tee that up, and please.
Thank you, Chairman Baird, and you are totally right that the Minnesota legislature, especially the House, has a long tradition of not earmarking funding for projects. I'm going to go over that a little bit in more detail as we get into it, but I just want to say right from the beginning that we are grateful for that.
You're welcome.
So we begin with the statewide transportation plan. As I said, the statewide transportation plan establishes the policy framework for investment decision making and establishes high-level performance measures to know how we're doing toward making progress toward each of those goals. These are the 10 policies in the current statewide transportation plan. Well, these are the policy areas. There's specific language for each of them. But they establish traveler safety as our first priority. We establish a goal for maintaining our infrastructure, the roads, the bridges, the lights, the sewer, the drainage, in safe and sound condition. We have a policy that we will operate and maintain the system in an efficient way. Now, when we talk about operation and maintenance, we are talking about things like the snowplow removal, the maintaining the lighting on the roadway system and the light. We have a policy goal to effectively connect Minnesota to national and international markets, to connect ourselves effectively within the state on our interregional corridor system. A policy sets up a goal on mobility within the metropolitan region as well as in communities in greater Minnesota. It commits us to seeking to support community and local development issues. You may call those economic development issues. And the last two are really not so much what we will do, but how we will do it. Policy 9 commits us to being good stewards of the environment, and Policy 10 commits us to be accountable and transparent in all that we do. And by the time I'm through with this programming process, you will believe that. Okay.
Ms. McKenzie, I do have a question from Representative Schmanski.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. McKenzie, maybe I didn't hear everything, but are these 10 goals, are they ranked in priority within the agency from number 1 to number 10? Or is that what we're seeing here,
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, no, this isn't a ranked order other than to say safety is our top priority.
Thank you.
So moving on from the policy framework established in the statewide transportation plan to now we have the 20-year highway investment plan. On our highway system, what are we going to plan to do over the next 20 years? And we have a four-step process. Step 1, we identify the investments we need to make to meet all those performance goals that are established in the statewide plan. In step 2, we estimate how much revenue we have. In step 3, trading off the revenues against all of our investment needs, we develop a balanced program, and I'll say a little bit more about that. Step 4, we actually take those investment program goals to create a 20-year investment plan for the highway system. So step 1, to identify the investment needs that we have to meet our performance goals, we look at our pavement model. We have the management system models for pavement and bridge. We estimate life cycle cost needs for some of our other infrastructure, like how often do we need to replace lights and signs and things like that. To estimate our safety needs, we go to our strategic highway safety plan, look at the recommended fixes on the various roads of various different characteristics, travel, and the like, and identify all the safety investments we would need to meet. In mobility, we have goals for Twin Cities congestion and IRCs. We actually have a predictive model about whether we're going to meet our mobility needs on our interregional corridor system. And from all of that, and then we work with our communities, because our performance measures don't measure every little thing. We work with our communities to identify other needs. We call them regional and community improvement needs, and they're basically the needs that do not have a specific performance measure tied to them. So we take all of that information together to identify all the investments we would need to make over the 20 years to meet these performance goals. And in the last plan that was completed in 2009, we identified $65 billion of investments that should be made to meet the performance goals. $62 billion of those were actually investments identified to be made to meet specific performance targets, and then $3 to $5 billion were those community and regional improvement priorities I've talked about. Then we look at available revenue. This was a 2008 revenue projection that we actually used for the plan. We take existing law, so this doesn't anticipate increases in federal funds, and we project out available state, federal, and trunk highway bond funds available. And we came up with about $15 billion of revenues over that 20-year period of time. So, with $15 billion and $65 billion of investments needed to address every performance area, how do we make that trade-off? And the commissioner committed to develop a balanced program that would address, at least to some degree, all of our four key investment priorities areas: safety, mobility, preservation, and community and regional improvement.
Ms. McKenzie, could you pause right there for a question from Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McKenzie, if you could just, on your previous slide, you'd mentioned state funds and federal funds, and I know it took me years just to figure out what did state funds consist of when it comes to compiling the $15 billion total figure. What are the funding tracks that comprise the state funds portion?
Well,
the gas tax, for example.
Right. The gas tax, the MVEST, the TAB fees, all of the constitutionally dedicated sources that go into the transportation system.
Representative Morrow?
And just to be clear, thank you, Mr. Chair, that we're not talking about general funds.
Oh, no. There are general funds. There's a small amount of general fund used in the Department for Transit and the like. But for the state road construction program, which I'm talking about now, we must use the constitutionally dedicated transportation.
Thank you for the distinction, Representative Morrow, and members, and Ms. McKenzie. It is possible to use general fund money. We just have chosen not to. We've chosen to keep with the dedicated funds, correct?
Actually, I think there, Mr. Chair.
I think there may be
a question about that. Certainly the bond council has said we cannot use general obligation bonds on the trunk highway. I think in the past when you have appropriated general funds to the trunk highway, they've been appropriated as general funds, they've been deposited in the trunk highway fund, and then they become trunk highway funds.
Thank you for the distinction, and it's a nuance that will come up later again, members, as we move ahead. But thank you for the line of questioning. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just before we move off the previous slide, and the question was asked about state funds, when you put this together, when you put this slide together, do your state economist model what should happen if we see gasoline and diesel prices go, like they were 3 or 4 years ago, to $4 and $5 a gallon? We did see and even with this economy, we saw a downturn in the amount of use and thus tax. Are you safe in saying that that's a good projection as far as state funds from that? Or?
Well, Ms. McKenzie, you could take a crack at it, but that is one of the problems we've had, because I believe it was 2008, members, for the first time in the history since we started gasoline sales in the state, the first time we've seen actual gasoline consumption and gas tax revenues decline. Now, it's back up a little bit this year, I believe, but Ms. McKenzie, if you'd like to further illuminate.
Mr. Chair, the only thing you know about a 20-year forecast is that it is wrong. This is we call this a planning level forecast. It is very general. It charts general trends. In 2010 and to fiscal years 10 and 11, we did actually have to cut funds from the department, including from the construction program, because the revenues that actually came in were under the forecasted level. So will there be a lot of actual blips and bumps in this forecast? Absolutely. This is just to give us a general sense of where the revenues are going, where our costs are going, to allow us to balance that up over the long term. Mr.
Planning
Chair.
Purposes. Thank you. Good. Representative Nelson, I think you were up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. McKenzie. And along that line about state funds, I always hear from different constituents about we shouldn't be siphoning money off of the highway user fund for other projects. And they keep saying trails and this and that. And you said there's what's constitutionally dedicated. Do those funds get used for other things other than building roads when they're in the highway user trust fund?
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, the state funds are constitutionally dedicated to highways, and there is a lot of legislation and law and policy governing what that means, because there's obviously a lot of nuance. What I think you are talking about, Representative Nelson, is the federal funds. And the federal funds have much broader use, including the ability to use them on trails. Now, that would be, the trails are not typically MnDOT facilities. The trails are typically local facilities. And through the ATP process that I talk about, the locals decide to take some of the federal formula funds and put them on trails.
Representative Nelson, follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up. Yeah, that's where I'm going at, because I've heard this, and when the debate was on when we raised the gas tax, I had people tell me, well, I'd be willing to pay for a gas tax if I knew that all that money was going towards roads. And state gas tax dollars go just for roads, mm-hmm. or just for highway funds. They don't get used for trails.
Ms. McKenzie?
Yes, correct. There is a constitutional formula that distributes the highway user tax fees, 62-20-99. 62 goes to MnDOT highways, 29% goes to the county roadway system, and 9% goes to the local roadway system.
While we're on this this line of inquiry, Ms. Zewers has a comment to help further illuminate Representative Nelson's question.
Mr. Chair and members, a portion of the gas tax dollars is from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. They are transferred to the Natural Resource Fund. And what that is it's the gas tax revenues attributable to the gas used in snowmobiles, ATVs, motorboats. So it's the formula was created to at least try to get at the amount of gas that was used not on the roadways.
And that's always a fascinating discussion around here, members. Representative Hornstein, thank you, Ms. Zewers. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Benson's question reminded me of a question I have, and that is, I know, Ms. McKenzie, the department completed a study, I think last year or the year before, on alternative financing mechanisms looking into the future because of our reliance on the gas tax. If gas consumption goes down, as I hope it does, through conservation programs, use of electric cars, et cetera, and I think our supplies are running out besides, but we're looking potentially, you know, nationally, and Representative Leader had led the discussion this even as, I think, early as the 1990s, alternative financing through a vehicle miles fee of some kind. Are you looking, how are you integrating these long-term trends that I think point to a reduction in gas tax revenue and alternative financing? How does that figure into your forecasting? Because you're looking at 2028, and boy, I think even sooner than 2028, we're going to be having to look at some alternatives to the gas tax. How does that question, that fundamental question before our transportation finance planners everywhere, figure into how you do this forecasting?
Representative Ms. McKenzie.
Yes, as I said, this is really a long-range plan, so specific technology changes, the methodology really doesn't incorporate. We're basically looking at national long-range models of what gas consumption will be, what incomes will be, but these are not, really this tool is not intended to be precise as to technological changes. We anticipate technological changes. A planning level forecast is really supposed to just give you some reasonable parameters mm-hmm. in which to begin to identify investments within a fiscally constrained
Okay, just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair and Ms. McKenzie, is there something that, if it's not in this particular forecast projection, is there something that the department is doing or is working on or anticipating in terms of gas tax revenue declining in the next 10 to 20 years and how we're going to respond to that? In fact, is there another way that the department is looking at that besides this model? Is this being discussed at MnDOT?
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein. Yes, we are looking at alternative funding options all the time. We have a mileage-based user fee study that's just beginning to get underway right now. We're definitely trying to stay apprised of all of the potential trends and changes that could come upon
us.
Thank you.
I do know that in the packet of stuff the representative leader forwarded to me when he moved on this fall, there were some reports on some interesting looks around the world of people doing alternative methods of using, of collecting user fees for using infrastructure. That perhaps is an entire session on another day. But Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just go back to that bonding issue.
Certainly.
Because it is true that there was an interpretation that if we, even if we did geobonding for highways, mm-hmm. the debt service would have to be paid for out of the Trunk Highway Fund. The exception to that is local roads and bridges. And I did wonder where, I mean, since we're talking about capital programs and performance measures, where on your organizational chart, because that entity is also, that planning entity is also in MnDOT. So clearly you're making some recommendations about which local bridges to fund with geo bonds. Where does that happen, and how do you track that planning and performance measures?
Ms. McKenzie, and when you're answering, would you also talk about this presentation you're making today? Is this the state trunk highway thing? Does this include the local roads, or is that a separate function and so on? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, yes, this is about the state trunk highway system. The state aid does have a small, our state aid division, which administers the funds that go to the county highway system and city highway system, does have a small amount of geo bonds, and geo bonds can be used on the local system altogether, that they give to bridges. But really, all of the roadway planning for the local system is done by the local units of government. Of course, in the metropolitan area, that's coordinated by the Met Council. So the counties and the cities are doing many, many bridges, including those done with the geo bonds.
Mr.
Representative
Chair, my question was specifically, yes, I know this presentation is for highways, but the organizational chart on the second slide, where you do include all the modes.
Oh, here we go.
So there is a gentleman in MnDOT who gives us the number to include for local bridges. So I just wondered where that person fits on this multimodal transportation plan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, these are MnDOT's plans for MnDOT's systems. The state aid division, where you get the estimates for local bridge investment needs, they don't do planning directly. The counties and the cities do their own planning for investment needs, usually with 5-year and 10-year plan. MnDOT does not do planning for the local road system.
I think I recognize that where Representative Hausman's trying to go with this, and that is that when MnDOT puts together their plan of work, their program for investing in roads on the trunk highway system, it actually is a thoughtful process that ranks the projects. Now, in another area, we, as the legislature, commit general obligation bonds for local roads and local bridges. There actually is a thoughtful process also that ranks those projects also. I think that's what the committee needs to be educated on, that we just don't throw, say, $10 million out there and they kind of come and have a food fight to decide who gets it. There actually is someone at MnDOT that helps categorize those projects, and there actually is a thoughtful process for allocating that money. Is that where we were trying to go, Representative House?
Yes.
Good. It was a good question. Thank you. Members, are you kind of catching the concept there, that there actually are people that are not political that put these things together and help us prioritize the money we spend.
Okay, so just quickly now, so we get the revenues and then we have to establish this balanced program. How do we make the trade-off? How do we identify $15 billion of investments versus $65 billion worth of needs? Commissioner committed to a balanced program, and here's basically how that balanced program came out looking. That we would meet the requirements of the Chapter 152 legislation, especially giving priority for funding to bridges, interchanges, and transit advantages. That we would focus on system performance, and with stakeholder input, we would invest three times the amount identified in the Strategic Highway Safety Plan for preventative safety needs, and then after those commitments, the rest of the funds are at the discretion of each district in our decentralized process. So here's how the plan came out. You can see that we have about 78% of the funds in the plans identified for preservation of the infrastructure, that's roads and bridges, the lights, the sewers, the drainage system. We have an old and aging system. Performance on our bridge system is very good and will meet all of its targets over this period, but performance on our pavements does not meet targets and will continue to decline over that period. We put about 4% into mobility, and then 4%, about 7% into mobility, and then 4% ended up going to these regional and community improvement priorities. As again, these are priorities of our local partners. We don't necessarily have a critical performance area or need identified for them, but based on stakeholder input, we've identified them as a priority. So that establishes our 20-year investment plan. Then we go to our programming process, and that's the process when we begin to take general investment categories and budgets and start to identify specific projects that will receive funding. We have two programming documents. That is our four-year statewide transportation improvement program, and for the next 6 years beyond that, our highway improvement program, forming our 10-year HIP. The statewide transportation improvement program is a federally required document and includes all federally funded projects, both local projects funded with federal funds, plus MnDOT projects, plus all of MnDOT state funded projects with either highway funds or with bonds. It gets updated annually. As the representative noticed, our revenues change annually. We had to cut our state funds the last 2 years, and so we had to update our STIP to reflect those reductions in revenues. Costs change. Performance information comes out and makes it evident that we should adjust our investments. So annually we update this statewide transportation improvement program and our 10-year highway improvement program. And the 10-year HIP, showing both the 4 years of the current STIP and the next 6 years, is essentially done right now and should be available to you within the next few days. So this is the construction program, the MnDOT construction program, going back to 2004 and then looking out through the current STIP. So that's fiscal years 11, 12, 13, and 14. You can see in blue, what we call our base funding or our regular funding. Those are our regular formula funds. It's our regular state funds in the state road construction budget. The brown on top of that are the bond funds that came principally from Chapter 152, but we've had other bond appropriations since then. You can see the green that came from ARRA when we were in the middle of delivering the ARRA program, and you can see the light orange that were the emergency relief funds we received when we were replacing the 35W bridge. Mm-hmm. So, how do we pick all the projects in that construction program? MnDOT has a blend of both statewide or central programming and decentralized programming. Central programming would be those funding projects that are legislatively directed. Now, this is not earmarks, but like in Chapter 152, the language specifically said we needed to replace or repair certain fracture critical and structurally deficient bridges. We centrally, with our bridge office, identify those bridges that the legislation called for and program those for funding and delivery. We also have a small amount of federal funds to help fund projects of statewide or regional significance. Typically, these are projects that are too big for any one district or area transportation partnership to fund on its own. And then for special cases, like when we have one-time funding where the projects have to be committed very quickly, we might do that on a statewide or centralized basis. But the vast majority of our construction funds are programmed by our districts in partnership with the area transportation partnerships. The area transportation partnerships are specifically work on programming the federal funds, and the districts then work in consultation with their partner to fund the state trunk highway funds. So here's a picture of our federal funds. In 2009, we got $538 million of federal funds, and you can see how the various amounts are peeled off for these various programming processes. First, $51 million really comes off the top to complete the federally required planning, research, and project development processes. That goes into MnDOT's operating budget, not into the construction project budget. Then we distribute $392 million to the area transportation partnerships for their decision-making processes. It's in the area transportation partnerships that they decide the split, how much is spent on the local system versus how much is spent on the state system. In 2009, it was about 40-60. 60% went to MnDOT, 40% went to the locals. And then we have these small, centrally programmed funds, the statewide and bridge, statewide corridor and bridge fund, as I talked about, to help fund these very big projects that are too big for the districts to fund alone, and this district C fund, which is really a fund to fund projects that are really not really cannot be identified for a specific district or specific location. For example, we fund local red dye fuel enforcement through this District C fund. And that's really a statewide effort to ensure that the tax-free gas, the red dye gas that's tax-free, is not being used in transportation vehicles on the trunk highway system. So, who are these area transportation partners? They are multi-county, sub-state partnerships. This is a map of the 8 ATPs in the state. They are principally responsible for our decentralized programming process for the federal funds. They were developed actually in response to ICE-T in the early 90s to give more local influence in the investment decision-making process and local practices. They include our traditional partners, transportation partners, the counties, the cities, as well as non-traditional partners such as transit providers. The role is to prioritize projects for federal funding in the metropolitan region. It's the Met Council who principally plays that role. Here is the percent of those $392 million that each ATP gets. 43% goes to the metro area, about 10% to each of the three big districts, I call them, the Rochester District 6, Duluth District 1, and Baxter District 3, and then 5 to 6% for the small districts of Bemidji, Detroit Lakes, Mankato, and Mill.
Ms. McKenzie?
Yes, Mr.
Not that I want to pop the can off or lid off of this can of worms, but can you give us just a brief idea of why some districts get less than others? You said smaller districts. Does that mean lane miles, population, or just I'm sure there's criteria that kind of delineates this, and I'm sure these numbers move from year to year.
There was
a brief overlook on how that works.
Mr. Chair, there was a very long, complicated process. I actually have a table here with me, I think, to identify what share of the fund should go to each ATP. It's based on 60% based on preservation performance factors, pavement needs, bridge needs such as area of functionally obsolete or structurally deficient bridges, 10% to safety based on the number of fatalities in each of the ATPs, 30% to mobility, including congested VMT or the amount of vehicle miles traveled in the state under congested circumstances, transit trips, and then projected future VMT. So those are the basic factors that go into the formula that comes out with those shares.
Good. Thank you.
So the ATP membership is intended to represent the region and our transportation partnerships. The membership is selected by the district engineer working with the executive directors of the metropolitan planning organizations in each ATP and the regional development commissions. Each of the ATPs is really unique. The size of the ATPs ranges from 11 to 33 persons, with the exception of District 1 in Duluth, which has 54 members. In addition to MnDOT, membership on the ATPs includes our MBOs, RDCs, city and county, tribal representatives, representatives of transit government, economic development organizations, just to give you a few examples. The makeup of each ATP is unique, and the process for each ATP is unique for prioritizing projects in that ATP. But there, generally, all the ATPs have these things in common. There's a solicitation for projects, there's a technical ranking of projects, and then there's integration of the various project categories into a single prioritized area transportation improvement program for the ATP. We receive that as a final document. We do not change the priorities established by the ATPs for those funds. So, I've talked to you now about how we program our federal formula funds in Minnesota. But Minnesota and all states gets funds through the earmarking process, either through in our six-year authorization funding bill, earmarks are identified, and in our annual appropriation bill, earmarks are identified. And then there's a small amount of funding we receive through what we call discretionary or allocated programs, which are typically national competitions where you submit projects in a specific program category and your project is selected or not. So earmarks. Earmarks are projects with specific funding identified in them in a federal authorization or appropriation bill, in a funding bill. Earmark projects do not need to come through the extensive planning and programming process we've identified above. Earmarks come with partial funding. At a minimum, we have to provide the 20% match to those earmarks, we, either our local partners or us. But oftentimes they come with a very, very small fraction, maybe 10 or 15 or 20% of the total funds needed for the project. As I've described to you, we have a fiscally constrained, committed transportation program. And when those projects come in order to fund them, we have to take off funding from projects that we have committed to fund those projects, displacing projects then that come through the full public involvement and programming process. The funding for earmarks is also inflexible. As I said, it comes identified for a specific project and actually oftentimes for specific work on a specific project. And so if for some reason that project does not or cannot go forward, we cannot use those funds in another way.
Ms. McKenzie?
Yes.
I have a couple of questions on this slide, if I may. Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McKenzie, as someone who is new to the committee, I just have a couple of general questions kind of regarding this, the federal portion of this, and in general with the recent turn of events of the past election with the turnover in the 8th District. Former Representative Oberstar was kind of known for his transportation earmarks, and I was just wondering, do you see... or I guess what type of effect do you see with that, and then also with the overall push, at least in the House, with the reduction or elimination of earmarks? Does that give you more flexibility? I mean, what effects do you think that will have?
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sanderson, we, as I've just described, from a transportation planning and program perspective and project funding perspective, earmarks are problematic for us. The funds that are assigned to earmarks all come out of the Federal Highway Trust Fund. And so the more that goes to earmarks, the less there is available for the regular formula funds, for the regular process that we and our partners go through in identifying and prioritizing funds. So, you know, it's hard for me to project. There's many bills out there. We personally don't see a loss of total revenue, very unlikely a loss of total revenue to the states, almost for sure not a loss of total revenue to the states, because it goes out one way or the other, and probably not over the long run to Minnesota. But that's just a hunch. Obviously, the bills are popping up and developing and emerging every day, so it's hard for us to say anything.
Just an observation on the earmarks. When we talk about them from a federal level, it's not just transportation. I mean, people send money to study pickle juice or something like that, you know, or sheep or whatever, rock music. Those aren't necessarily highway funds. That's other funds. It's also an earmarking phenomenon. But the ones that Ms. McKenzie is referring to are monies that are actually carved out of our federal allotment that comes about every 6 years, once every 6 years, and that displaces money that could go elsewhere in the carefully crafted process that she's trying to describe to us today. But we keep interrupting her with good questions, I might add. Representative Nelson, you have one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. McKenzie. And I guess my question was along the same lines as Representative Sanders, because I read an article recently that talked about one of the problems with earmarking for highways is that it takes money or takes money aside, and I think you already answered that, but from money we're supposed to get that we could use for all of the road projects throughout the whole state, and it ties it up so that we end up getting less money. You tell that money is because that money's set aside and earmarked for that specific project, and if that's not in the system to be built today, tomorrow, 10 years from now, that money sits there and we can't use it for anything else.
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, exactly that.
And I mean, that's probably where the $131 million that USA Today had mentioned comes from, those kind of projects that we're trying to identify. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, we're working on that. Our records show that we have over 110 active earmarked projects going back to 1998 with $213 million of unspent funds tied.
More than we thought.
That it's very complicated to sort out what is spent and what isn't spent because of the federal accounting process, but that is our current estimate.
When you clean that list up, I'm sure the committee would be fascinated to have a presentation on that. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we could have a long discussion about earmarks. We could have a long discussion about where the projects lie. I know that I won't go down the Highway 14 discussion, and sometimes earmarks are used to, for example, purchase right-of-way.
Yes.
So the project itself is not yet built, but the earmark has been identified because of a local concern. But I digress a little bit from my observation or question to you as chair. As Ms. McKenzie was talking, we've heard some discussion at the state level when it comes to state bonding and state bonding authority and how there are state bonds out there that have not yet been spent after years, and I think Chapter 152 is one potential example of. We have authorized bonding for bridge projects. Mm-hmm. Those bonds have not all been spent. I'm hoping, as chair, it's not your goal for this committee to have those bonds all be brought back. That's bonding authority. Let's call back those unused bonds yet. But I'd like to hear your thoughts about bond authority, a bonding bill, and where the transportation bonds sit in that picture.
Sure. Well, outside of this discussion, if you'll indulge me for just a moment, no, it's not this chair's plan to pull back any bonding that would move roads and bridges ahead. Certainly not in that case. And if I remember the Chapter 152 bonds, aren't they attached to a portion of the gas tax to pay those down? and some other bonding authority we gave MnDOT to do some major projects like some of the interchanges and some of the other big projects that we just didn't have the cash on hand. And our intention will be to continue to move those ahead because this chair likes roads and bridges. Mr. Morrow.
And just one final observation. I know we've talked about earmarks, and I'm just thinking about the 35W bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the 35W bridge would be considered an earmark. Well, it was a specific project request, and I believe why the department joined in requesting that earmark. So at some points, sometimes we do ask for earmark projects, even at the state level, from MnDOT, is my understanding.
If we would consider that an earmark, if I might just add, that was an extraordinary instance when that happened, and one that I think we've probably had unanimous consent on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but from time to time they are useful and practical, but just we want to stay away from the ones that gum up the works and kind of bump other people out of line that are there. Ms. McKenzie, if you care to comment and then proceed, that would be great.
Well, this brings me back to my second opportunity to say that the Minnesota legislature, especially the House, has a long tradition of not earmarking. Mm-hmm. And from the entire conversation we've just had, I think you can understand why I'm going to say again, thank you for that practice.
Yes.
So, now on to state funds. I showed you the blue diagram showing the distribution of the federal funds. These are the state funds for the road construction budget, so obviously there are many more state funds than this, but these are the state funds in our four-year current STIF. They average $270 million a year. Lower in fiscal 11, as I said, we had to cut those funds due to a lower tax collections than had been projected, anticipated to increase to our more standard level of $290 million in the future years. Of the state funds, of the 207, $254 million goes to the districts for our decentralized programming process. Again, like with the federal process, the districts work with the performance information, input from our expert offices, input from our local partners to prioritize those projects. There are two little centralized pieces. One is a District C, similar to the federally funded District C, that we take for projects that are not really easily tied to a specific geographic location, $7 million a year. And then the commissioner established a $10 million a year Destination Innovation Fund out of the state road construction budget to specifically give incentive to do construction practices, design, and the like that were innovative and new. Of the trunk highway bonds, MnDOT has received nearly $2 billion of trunk highway bonds in appropriations since 2008. Now, they come on a yearly basis and are spread out through 2018. But the investment goals for the vast majority of these bonds have been legislatively directed. Now, again, I do not mean earmarks by this. I mean they were directed toward specific policy goals. For example, in Chapter 152, MnDOT was required to replace or repair certain fracture-critical or structurally deficient bridges. 141 were identified, 121 funded with $1.2 billion of $1.8 billion of the Chapter 152 bonds. In addition to that, the legislation directed us to spend a certain amount on transit advantages, a certain amount on interchanges, and the like. So in this case, those funds are managed centrally because the investment goals have been specified legislatively. Again, how do we select the projects? As I said, most of the projects are either legislatively directed or selected by the districts, looking at available revenues, project costs, what is our performance information telling us, what are our pavement conditions, do we have a safety issue, and the like. Input from our partners to prioritize projects within that annual budget. So here's how the program comes out for 2011 through 2014. Again, about 70% of our funds go to infrastructure preservation investments, that means roads, bridges, sewers, lights, and the like. And while MnDOT is projected to meet all of its performance targets for bridge condition in the next 10 years, pavement condition is seriously below our targeted levels and is projected to continue to decline. The number of roads in poor condition, that's with the roads we categorize as poor, fail the coffee cup test. so you can't ride with a coffee cup in your coffee cup holder because the coffee splashes. So that's the way to think of them. The number of miles in poor condition will rise from 1,000 miles to 2,000 miles over the next 10 years. About 6% of all funds are committed to standalone safety projects. However, all projects, especially pavement and bridge projects, include a full range of safety improvements. So they'll include rumble strips, rumble stripes, turn lanes, anything the project has identified for it to improve the safety of the road. Safety fatalities are one of our performance areas that we're very proud of. Fatalities have fallen in 4 of the last 6 years. We have nearly met our target of only 400 fatalities a year, and that we're second in the nation in the fatality rate in Minnesota. So our efforts through our strategic highway safety plan with our partners in the local units of government, the enforcement industry, we have a lot to be proud of there. 10% for mobility, most of that's mobility in the metropolitan area, 5% for these regional and community improvement acts, and about 12% called other. And our legislative liaison said, wow, that's a lot of other. Well, these are the investments that we need to make to deliver all of our projects. So what we put into that category is right-of-way, utility agreements, design contracts. So all of the kind of ancillary work that allows us to then let a construction project to meet one of these construction areas is in that other category. Just the final slide on the actual dollars. This is our dollars by ATP or district. You can see that we have, this is all of our federal funds, state and local federal funds, state trunk highway funds, and the trunk highway bonds. Little over $4 billion programmed over the next 4 years.
Would you remind us what District C is again, Ms. McKenzie?
Oh, the District C, I've talked to you now about the little bit that's pulled up for centralized programming, both of the federal funds and of the state funds. We call that District C, or the Central District. That's why it's called District C.
The central office right across this, right down the hall here?
Right. Oh. And that's to do these projects that either don't have a specific geographic area, or in the other federal category, we have certain allocated programs like our international crossing program, where we have funds, but not all the projects have been selected yet. We'll keep that in the district seed line till the specific projects have been identified, and then once a project's identified, we'll move that up into the actual district. District 1 or District 2 would get those international border crossing dollars. So in some ways, it's just a parking lot when we have allocated funds where the projects haven't been selected, and the other amounts are these small amounts of District C funds.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. McKenzie, it looks like about wraps it up, but I'm, as the chair, I'm looking at slide 25, indicating fiscal year 11 through 14. Of course, we're looking at the budget year 12 and 13 that we're responsible for right now. This would indicate to me that maybe a finance bill is in the works over there and will be coming over here in a while, short while. If you got numbers identified on that pie chart, there must be something close coming. You must be getting close with your bill. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Well, no, these are the identified funds that I've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Anticipated future funds are not in here.
Okay.
These are really just the federal funds that we have, the federal, state, trunk highway funds. We have identified and we have commit.
Okay, with that, questions, comments? Members, thank you, Ms. McKenzie, for your report. And members, she spoke of the payment preservation program, the coffee cup test. It's actually a little more involved than that. I thought it was a fascinating presentation. Perhaps we'll have those folks come over and explain how they measure pavement performance, quality, and so on and so forth. So you know that we actually do have objective criteria other than just the coffee cup thing.
That's what it looks like to the average driver, Mr. Chair. Thank you for having me.
And you're welcome. Members, with that, I've got just a couple quick announcements. In your packets today, you have a two-page sheet of key transportation terms that Mr. Burris put together for us, another sheet of transportation finance terms with all kinds of acronyms on here. So when we have expert witnesses throwing around things like HUTD and CASA and things like that, you can look them up. Mr. Burris and Ms. Zewers, thank you for putting these together for us. And eventually we're going to have the a kind of a cash flow chart, kind of like what you saw today. In fact, if you just want to clip and save that page from Ms. McKenzie's report, kind of show you how the money flows.
I like that.
So there you go. Members, any other things to bring before this committee? If not, we are adjourned.
Mr. Chair, I do want to wish the chair good luck on Sunday. his favorite team is playing in the Super Bowl, and our thoughts are with you, Mr.
Well, I'll be doing my best to beat the Vikings' dreaded foes on Sunday in Dallas. So, I'm sorry to my Mr. Packer comrade down the street. Okay, anything serious to talk about in this committee? Hearing none, we are adjourned.
Serious?